think the other interesting debate is, okay, Duncan versus LeBron. And this was at the point where LeBron's 2-4 in the finals, hadn't had that, you know, kind of championship ceiling or reputation ceiling championship. So to me, like, if I'm going to rethink it, I would be more inclined to put LeBron over Duncan potentially. I mean, certainly think LeBron's going to finish above Duncan by the time he retires.
Uh-huh.
But like for this very specific exercise, the last 20 years when Duncan's entire career is like 19 of those 20 years, the Spurs are easily the most consistent and dominant team, and he's the reason why, I think you got to give
it. So wait, you still put Duncan over LeBron? Come on, man.
I think so.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp. On my left, in my hotel room, Ben Golliver.
This is easily the most intimate Open Floor. This is great, Andrew.
Live from the Hard Rock Hotel here in Las Vegas.
I'm not sitting on your lap, but it's close.
You can tell it's a classy hotel. The room, the mini bar came with its own vape.
Oh.
So we are 5 stars here this week. Living the Vegas dream. How you doing, man?
Nothing better than inefficient cancer delivery. I mean, that's really...
I mean, as you say, as you sip your Monster energy drink.
Okay. So it's going to be a vice off is what we're talking about.
Totally.
Well, that's Vegas in a nutshell, right? I mean...
I've never gotten into the vape life, but...
No,
you
please.
Know, maybe
God,
this
no.
is the week to do it. I don't
no,
know.
No, just don't do that. Please resist.
Yeah. I saw my celebrity sighting for the week.
Oh, God. I'm so excited to hear all about this because I was getting massive text messages at like, what?
Nicolas Cage, man. Oh. It was great. We were walking out. We went to the ping pong tournament for, I was there for about an hour last night.
Didn't he recognize you? He was like, you're the guy from that SI podcast, right?
Yeah, totally. It was great. We had a knowing exchange, a knowing glance.
Hashtag real recognize real.
Yeah, no, they were, we were with Mark Bechtel, who is SI's NBA editor. And we were walking out and he starts grabbing my arm and it's like, Cage. And I was like, who the fuck is Cage? Is that like a wrestler?
Michael
or
Cage.
Like,
Michael Cage is here. Yeah, get some rebounds.
I have no idea what's happening. But then he yelled to Cage. I'm generally pretty awkward in those moments. So I didn't really have a lot to say. I regret not making a joke about Con Air because, you know, Con Air ends on the Vegas Strip. But in the moment, I was just like, I'm going to let him do his thing. He was looking a little weathered.
Time out. What's the protocol? Do you ever go for the selfie in these situations?
The only person I've ever taken a selfie with in that situation was Suge Knight.
Oh, wow. So you visited him in jail. That's pretty impressive.
No, I saw him in a hotel bar one night and was like, man, I got to go say what's up to Suge.
Wow, that's legendary.
Yeah, that's my my top celebrity exchange. Other than that, though, like, I'm just going to let him do him.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, he showed you the respect. Like, he gave you the head nod, like, Open Floor, great intro music. Alan Kim kills the production. Like, you could tell that he was feeling it, but he didn't have to, like, geek out on you.
Totally. Yeah. And then Bechtel was actually the one who was geeking out. He just was, like, literally losing his mind and then was just like, hey, Cage. And Cage gave us the point.
Yeah, he did.
Which is good.
Yeah, he did.
So,
that's a good life, Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, he was doing his thing. It's all part of the scene here in Vegas.
No, it really is. It's weird that he would actually be at a casino having a good time at night instead of at the 3 o'clock game between D-League Select and Milwaukee. Like, why wasn't
he was actually, he was getting out of a limo. I'm surprised that there wasn't more of like a VIP entrance or something. I kind of feel like Nick Cage is famous enough to sort of get some special treatment, but he was just among the people walking in with his family too.
I would say that 15 minutes of fame also last way longer in Las Vegas than anywhere else in the world, right?
That's
true. It's like 15 years of fame. I mean, you were trying to get Britney Spears tickets, like,
yeah
we were Googling her song names because we had never, like, we couldn't remember. That's how long it's been.
I remembered. Speak for yourself.
Oh, okay.
Fam.
Okay.
No, it's a good life for the washed up celebrities out here. But yes, all right. So basketball, let's talk basketball. You've been out here. I've only been here for like a day and a half.
Okay.
I just came for quick, state of the union meetings with some of our SI team.
You've been here since
what, Friday?
Since Thursday. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I had to get here a day early just so I could be ready for opening tip of the first game. It's been just, I can't believe I've been here a week. Like, time just absolutely flies here. And there's been a good number of like rookie performances kind of too. Like,
I know. So who I feel like we disagree on some of the standout rookies. Who,
let's do it.
Who has stood out to you most over the first 6 or 7 days?
I think there was a lot of early buzz around Chris Dunn. I still might give it to Simmons though. I think Chris Dunn and Simmons to me are sort of like have been the top. And then if you're looking at like overall performers, I hate to say it because I bag on this guy every podcast, but D'Angelo Russell's been pretty good.
Yeah, we're going to talk about D'Angelo.
And I also say Devin Booker's been really, really good. So I think those are the guys that I would like kind of put at the top of my
Devin list. Booker played for like 2 days, and then the whole league was like, this guy should not be here.
Dude, please, like, go easy on us. Even though he's 19 years old. Like,
yeah, it was pretty wild. I think I'm excited about the Suns based – The first game I saw, I got in Tuesday. The first game I saw was Phoenix versus like Miami. Tyler Ulis was doing his thing. I felt awfully vindicated after his draft night slide. I was sure that he was going to be good, and he was good. He looks like he's holding his own.
Yeah, I mean, he's perfect for Summer League. Like he's going to get his jersey right next to Nate Robb when they retired in the Raptors. He's going to be here for the next 5-6 years. It's going to be amazing.
I don't want to get too excited, but I think between Bender and Marquese Chris and Devin Booker, like, there's a super bright future 3 years from now. Devin Booker, I think, could be excellent, like, as soon as next year.
I think he's going to have a nice jump up next year. And when I look at Bender, you know, the knock was his body. To me, he seems a little stronger than I expected, which is a good sign. I mean, obviously he's thin, but he didn't seem like he was just getting knocked around. Chris, I just still don't know what to make of Chris.
I don't know either. He actually kind of looks more like a three.
Yeah.
The way he moves. Bender is awesome because of, because you look at him and he could probably play five. I don't think he's ever going to dominate, but he can do a lot of things that will free up the rest of the roster to get creative.
And what I really liked about Bender is I think they can give him a crap load of minutes this year. Like, I think he's going to be able to handle it well enough. Like, clearly there's no expectations there, but like sometimes you have those super young rookies or guys who are coming over where it's like we have to ease them into it and like be really careful with them. You don't want to damage their egos or whatever, like throw them too far into the deep end. And I think you can pretty much test him. Like, I think he's kind of ready for it.
I think that's one reason to be excited about the Suns is that they don't have pressure to win right now. And they can go into, like, next year's draft is so deep that they will have an opportunity to add one more piece before things get kind of real.
By the way, they got to trade Eric Bledsoe, right?
That's another thing like we should talk about.
Like, so how does Victor Oladipo get traded and Eric Bledsoe hasn't been traded yet? That's my question.
It's weird because also most of these teams don't need point guards.
Yeah.
So it's like Bledsoe should have value but doesn't really. But let's go bigger picture. Let's talk about Chris Dunn.
Okay.
I mean, he looked awesome the first few days.
Oh, I thought you were going to have a hot take because you said we disagreed with people, but Chris Dunn was the first name out of my mouth, and now you're saying he's great.
I mean, we generally disagree, but Chris Dunn, I'm really excited to see how he looks. I'm kind of catching – this sounds crazy, but there's, like, a hint of D-Wade vibes from him.
Ooh. He was just – he, like, swallowed up Moutier in the first game. There was just – I mean, he was longer. Like, I think of Moutier as, like, a physical point guard, right? Like, a guy who's going to be, like, pretty strong at that position as he goes forward.
Yeah,
especially
that's his skill.
Yeah. And I think Dunn was, like, stronger, longer, faster. Maybe not end-to-end faster, but, like, definitely great athletic – I mean, great athletic comparison between the two of them. The one thing, though, is the age, because that can be kind of deceptive, right? Like, he's older than Moutier by 2 years. He's older than Gary Harris, who played in that game by a year.
That's why people weren't that excited about D-Wade, too.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's feel like the best-case scenario is a D-Wade-type combo guard for him. And then the worst, probably more realistic scenario is, like, a version of Tyreke Evans that doesn't kill your team. Like,
I think he's
going to
be
Tyreke Evans.
Yeah, see, I think he's going to be better than Tyreke Evans. Because, like, I always had questions with Evans. Like, the physicality was always there, but sort of the polish wasn't.
Yeah.
Or, like, the system, kind of, like, knowing role, you know, not doing too much was never really there with Tyreke. And that kind of really came to light, I think, in New Orleans more than Sacramento. But to me, I think Dunn, like, he plugs in. Like, I think he understands what he's supposed to do. He seems like there's a lot of basketball IQ there. I think the biggest winners of Summer League have been Timberwolves fans and then Lakers fans, because the Lakers are back. Like, we're ready to declare it. the Lakers are back. Actually, you missed it. The first 3 days when Russell hit that game winner, I was just going around to everyone saying that over and over and over again. Like, I completely ignored everybody.
Getting high fives from 90% of the Vegas fans here.
Lakers are back.
Traveling from LA.
No, I think there's reason to be excited for both those teams. So it's in seriousness. Like, Minnesota, like, to me, long-term solution, Chris Dunn, makes a lot more sense than Rubio.
Yeah. And the Lakers, man.
That's a come up.
Let's talk about the summer Lakers. I love this group.
Yeah.
Because they also, not coincidentally, have been without Julius Randle. And the roster, like, makes a lot more sense when you throw Nance in that four spot.
Well, you know how I feel about Julius Randle. I mean, I don't see it with him.
That's because I'm all about the 2019 Lakers.
Yeah, no, they're going to be great. The Lakers-Suns Western Conference Finals in 6 years is going to be phenomenal.
I'm actually surprised that you're bullish on them, because I had heard through the grapevine that you were not a fan of Brandon Ingram, but I am a fan of Brandon Ingram.
No, I like Brandon Ingram. I was very, very convinced that Simmons was a better prospect. Like, I felt very strongly about that. I understood why everyone likes Ingram. I think he's got a chance to be a better player. Like, yes, there's definitely that potential, but I was just really, really in Team Simmons for that number one pick. In terms of fit in LA, I think Ingram's perfect fit. I like the fact that they even got him like a personal mentor with Luol Deng. Like, that's a kind of a underrated, intelligent move from the Lakers, even though it costs them so much.
$70 million mentor.
Well, it's better than throwing the money that Timothy Moss got to go chill on the beach.
I think they're going as far away from the Byron Scott era as possible, which is a wise move.
For sure. Well, and in the middle of that, though, is the most polarizing player of all of it. And the reason why I wasn't really in on the Lakers was Russell.
No. We need to – can you apologize for 6 months of D'Angelo slander?
Look, so I was gonna sit here with my tail between my legs after he hit that shot, right?
Yeah.
But then he goes and puts J.A. Donde on the spot and drops an F-bomb or whatever it was, S-bomb, on – live TV on ESPN. You can't do that. And it just kind of shows there's still a little knucklehead there. They got to kind of work the knucklehead out of them.
But it's not even the knucklehead aspect of that. It's just kind of whack.
It was whack.
Like, he knew he was on TV. I don't know. I've been Team D'Angelo for all of last year through the scandal.
I'm going to troll you so hard in a second.
I stayed loyal, but I'm kind of getting some like Odell Beckham vibes, which is not great.
So here, this is funny. The buzz from the scouts after he hits that buzzer beater, which was like the shot of summer league. You know, it gets like, I think it was like my most retweeted tweet of anything for like 3 months, right?
What?
Just a video of the shot from the arena, because the Lakers fans were going bonkers.
Lakers fans need a reason to believe, man.
The Lakers fans are back. But so he hits that shot, and the scouts said, "Yeah," but he ran down the court and he didn't celebrate with his teammates.
Oh, that's bullshit. Come on. Relax.
And they also were pointing out that there was, like, his dad's in the mix of the celebration and, like...
I would not worry about D'Angelo Russell from, like a real competitive standpoint.
Yeah.
I'm worried about whether he's someone who's actually cool or is going to, like, annoy the hell out of us for the next 5 or 6 years. Like, I think he's a genuinely cool person who's just a little immature. I don't want him to go down that Odell Beckham road where he becomes like the face of the millennial athlete.
I think there's a really good chance that happens.
I don't think so. I don't know. I'm not willing to give up hope. But really, the reason I'm excited about the Lakers is because I think Ingram, like, you can see the tools there where 2 or 3 years from now, he's going to be really, really good.
I think my takeaway from Ingram at Summer League was – because I haven't seen him a lot in person.
Yeah.
I think he's a little bit further away from impact level NBA player than I expected. But I think some of that was just the 1 versus 2 hype that I was hearing, you know, for the couple months coming in. And some people saying, you know, he should have been the number one pick.
Me saying that.
Yeah. But so you're still wrong. But I think his long-term ceiling is just really, really high.
It's wild, right? I mean, if D'Angelo is your second best player and Ingram is the star, like, you're in great shape.
You're a squad for sure. And I also think that his personality, I mean, he always looks like he's about to fall asleep. That's the one thing I worry about with him. But I think that's the kind of personality you need in LA. Like,
yeah.
It's better to be that than like Clarkson and Russell running around with the Kardashians and Jenners.
I think my guy, Jason Concepcion, said he had resting baked face.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Another reason I love him, man. He's great. And he also hasn't turned 19 yet, so that's something to consider.
For sure.
Like, he's far younger than almost any other rookie here.
I thought he played really well. I mean.
Yeah, right? Like, considering he's 170 pounds and 18 years old, like, he's acquitting himself pretty well.
Yeah, it was a little disappointing, though, the head-to-head showdown with Simmons. But Simmons didn't play great in that game either. But don't judge it off that. Like, judge it off the whole body of work.
We'll move to Simmons in a second. I have one question for you. With the Lakers, do you think could get to a play? No, they're going to be terrible. I'm not saying. But they're going to be, like, a fun 31-win team this year. I think with Luke on board, like, there's going
to
be –
Okay, I don't know if they're going to get to 31.
Okay, that's fair.
But I don't
might be a little ambitious.
I will say this. I am very excited to go to their game. So, and like, it's almost to the situation where, like, remember when KD was just like totally out of position for the Sonics?
Yeah.
His rookie year. He was fun to watch every single game just because it was like, where is this going to go? And I kind of feel the same way about Ingram. And then on top of that, you have the Russell taking the leap. Like, he's clearly like Russell from last year's Summer League to Russell to this year's Summer League is a completely different player, completely more confident, completely more effective, better decisions. I mean, there's still some turnovers there, but he was just so timid and just shook last year at Summer League and just never really found a shot. And so the growth there gets me really excited.
I was never worried.
Well, of course.
my Lakers question, though, is do you think Julius Randle can come off the bench?
Ooh, that's a terrible question to be asking for him, isn't it? But it's probably true.
I think that he could be really good as a sixth or seventh man.
To be honest, like, I really don't see it with him. Like, I don't know where he's going to go. Because one of the things that we learned from free agency is, like, if you're that low post guy, right? Like, if you're doing a lot of your scoring around the basket.
But he's tried to expand to the perimeter a little bit.
I just don't know if it's going to stick.
Yeah, I think that's going to be where Luke Walton makes his money, is if he can make Julius Randle fit with the rest of the roster. Then they're in really good shape.
And here's my thing with Randle's offense. An elbow jumper from him isn't enough. Like, he needs to have the three-point range. Like, if he's going to do it, because if he has a three-point range, he can handle a little bit. Like, he's very aggressive going left. He can get contact. But, like, he has to be able to pull defenders out far enough where he has enough room to work. Because right now he just drives into traffic so often, tries to do the spin move every single time.
That spin move, man. He goes to it over and over and over again. I kind of love it.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just have concerns about his fit into like a good offense from a spacing standpoint. But I think it's great that if Russell's three-pointers stick, and it looks like they are, if Ingram is going to be that kind of a shooter, which he will, that should alleviate a lot of the issues there. But I don't know. I'm still very skeptical on Randle.
That's fair. I am too. I'm all in on the 2019. We didn't even talk about Zubac, my guy.
Completely hurdled for a dunk. You saw that, right?
I did see that. Yeah, but
that's rare.
Let's shift to the Sixers. Another big man who needs a jump shot. Ben Simmons.
Yeah. So, I mean, clearly everyone's playing off of him. So people just rush to the Rondo comparison.
Yes.
I think that's so backwards. I don't think that's right. Because he will attack a soft defense, get to the rim, and he's physical enough to draw contact and to potentially finish. And also, when he drives to the basket, it does collapse the defense, so he has those kick-out passes. So, like, even though it's clearly, like, an obvious flaw, I hate non-shooters. I think, in general, that's a really, really bad thing to be. This is not your typical non-shooter, the Rondo comparison. It's just, he's just a different player. And I think that's kind of lazy, but he's got to figure it out.
Like, I've been making the 6'10 Rondo comparison since like
don't. It's
February.
So wrong. It's
no,
so wrong.
It's not, man. It's not. Because Rondo is one of the only players in the league where you will see him pass up like good looks at the bucket to overpass.
No question. Simmons did that a lot in the first game, a little bit less in the second game, but like he did it a lot. Like he's getting wide open 15 footers. From the elbow, from the baseline.
And even drives. Like, he'll have solid looks at the rim and then, like, dump it off or kick it out. And I don't really get it.
But don't you see the physical aspect, though? Like, he's getting to the free throw line.
Yeah.
Like, he has the ability to dunk in traffic. Like, he didn't necessarily, hasn't done it a ton, but he's going to be able to do that. Rondo would never do that. Rondo doesn't want to take contact ever. So he's like, when he's driving, he's not a threat.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. If first of all, if Rondo were 9 inches taller, like, he would be really tough to deal with. And that's what we're talking about with Simmons.
Yeah.
I just think
that's such a huge difference, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, like, to me, Simmons' passing is the single best skill in summer league. Like, there's nobody who does any other aspect of the game better than Simmons passes the basketball, reads the floor, and sets up really good looks for his teammates. I mean, everyone's sitting there saying we need to have a new stat in terms of how many assists Simmons should have because his teammates just suck, like missing shots, missing layups, whatever it is, because it happens so frequently. Like, he'll finish with 8 assists, and there'll be another 7 that could have been there.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be an issue for them as they build the team around him. I mean, we knew it was going to require compromises, right? Like, we said that the whole way. Like, you have to work around it. And he – I don't know if you saw the piece with his – Jake Fisher wrote about his mental coach, how he's trying to kind of, like, fight through some of the – I don't know if you want to call it insecurity or hesitation with the shot. Like, he's
– I have
trying.
A hot take.
Bring it.
I don't know if a 19-year-old needs a mental coach. Just be a basketball player, man.
Okay, well, what if he's...
I feel like Ben Simmons, there's a lot of branding,
bullshit on the fringes. I feel you on that. The counter would be if...
Like, Ben Simmons played 3 games and then needed a game off for rest. Like, I don't know,
that's
man.
A very common... That's a common something.
Like okay.
That. But, like, here's the counter. He has top 10 NBA player potential, right?
Okay, yes.
He has zero confidence in his jumper. If any player needed a mental coach, wouldn't it be that player?
That's true. Talk him through. I mean, so here's my Simmons issue. I have a fraught history. I don't even know if you know about my wars with the process over the past few years.
I can see the scars.
You wear the scars. I've been the heel, and I don't want to be the heel anymore. I love Mike Levin. I love Spike Eskin. Those are my guys, and I just don't want to be the guy who's like doubting the Sixers. But the like almost with it, it all it took was like a handful of vines before people were like, Ben Simmons is the future of the NBA.
Yeah,
and then like you watch him play, his passing is out of this world. His vision is crazy, but like the defense, he's going to need to like continue to work his ass off on that end to make sense long term. And then his lack of a jumper, like it's really bad.
It's bad. No, there's no question about it. I think already his defense in summer league, just because of how far expectations plunged at LSU in terms of his defense,
yeah,
was a little bit better than I was
That's
expecting.
True.
But not. I'm not saying like he's some big impact defender.
Like, I think he'll probably top out as like a net zero on that end.
Yeah, and
is fine.
Yeah, because like if you have to play him as like this point forward where he has to defend threes or fours, like he's not going to be a shot block. I mean, there's like not going to be any of that there. So that's going to really cap him. You know, whereas you know other guys in that role like a Draymond Green, obviously like it's just if you're you know point forward and you're Draymond Green defensively, it's just you're so much more valuable. But
I just feel bad because like. I want to enjoy Ben Simmons,
dude,
but then
really
I see
fun.
People
he's really
calling
fun.
Him the next LeBron
okay.
and saying that
well,
like he's the franchise and the Sixers are suddenly solved. And I'm like, yo,
okay,
slow down.
Okay, I completely agree with you on that. Now, let's also remember that OJ Mayo was on the cover of a magazine that had the title The Next LeBron, and
yeah.
he just got suspended for 2 years. And
I've seen Magic comparisons,
yeah.
too. I mean, I don't know.
Well, but you have to say, like, doesn't he enter the NBA as a top five playmaker for others? I mean, basically?
Yeah, I mean.
His passing is really, really, really good.
Yeah, you're right. Would you say Rondo is a top five playmaker?
Well, I have different issues with Rondo because I think he chases it. And my biggest concern for Ben, besides the jumper, is that he starts to chase those assists. And,
right.
And in the game against the Lakers, you could kind of see him doing that. He was trying to show out a little bit because he knew he was on TV, knew it was 1-2. So he was really trying to chase some of those highlight assists.
That Lakers game was amazing, by the way.
It started really slow and then it really came on.
Because my fiance was gone and I just like... didn't really have a whole lot going on that Saturday. And so I was like, well, screw it. Like, I guess I'll watch this game.
Yeah.
And it was the saddest basketball imaginable for about 2 quarters. Yeah. And then my fiance got home and we were hanging out, and then the game got good.
It got great. It was great. And, it was really fun.
Yeah, there was a rambling Jamie Foxx interview in the middle there. It was quite an experience.
Yeah. So with Simmons, though, it's okay to like him. Like, you don't have to love him. Like, yeah. It's okay. That's sort of my take with him.
I wish more people were in the, like, wait and see category with him, because I think he is going to be fascinating to watch.
Well, don't you also think, though, that some of the hype, obviously, it's the Sixers market driven, where it's like Lent, you know, that first piece of chocolate, like, tastes unbelievable.
I've never, like, practiced Lent before.
Neither have I, but okay. it's a go-to line for me. But, like, when you've been that bad for years, you've had nothing to cheer for. You've talked yourself into Bob Covington and that Joel Embiid is one day going to dump these custom soccer jerseys and actually play basketball. Oh, well, RIP to him because he got put absolutely on the ground.
There have been a lot of legends throughout the process.
Ben Simmons, like, is a legitimate.
Good player. And that's, like, definitely true.
And that's sort of how I look at it with them, is like, go nuts and hype it, man. Like, I remember that's how it was with the Blazers fans too. Like, they were so excited for Greg Oden when they drafted him, because they had been, like, the Jailblazers era, quote unquote Jailblazers before that. They did have Brandon Roy. Like, that got people excited a little bit. But when you have this idea, like, you're going to have the best player in the world at his age on your team, like, I have a hard time, like, telling people to calm down. Like, don't call him the next LeBron. That's not fair to him. It's definitely not fair to LeBron. We can agree about that. But, like, have fun.
I just think there are a lot of questions. Like, I want to know what they do with – they've been trying to trade Nerlens Noel. What do you think of that?
I think they should just trade basically all of their picks. Like, everyone's like, they have three amazing centers, like Joel Embiid, like Okafor, Nerlens. I'm like, no, they have zero. I don't think they have any. Yeah. I don't see a single one.
Nerlens, I think, could be really good. He must just be kind of a screw-up behind the scenes. I've heard, like, random whispers, like, at various points, but for a modern big man, he does everything you would want to do to have.
Yeah. And I think he fits the best with Simmons. So my thing with the way to get around Simmons is shooting, though, and this ties in with the bigs. I think they just have to run like crazy.
Well, the other thing I was thinking is, depending on what happens with Embiid, he's a weird chess piece that they have to, like, fit into their future, at least for now.
I don't really think he's a good fit with Simmons.
I don't either. But I think that if they long-term went Ben Simmons playing a lot of small ball five with Dario Saric at the four, that could be a lot of fun.
That just kind of blew my mind. I don't know.
Because they also keep in mind that they have, like, thank you, Sam Hinkie, they have, like, 6 lottery picks over the next 4 years.
I think if it was me, I would be – first of all, I might have, like, just an intervention with Nerlens Noel. Just be like, hey, Nerlens, like, we really need you, bro.
We need you, and we're not going to get anything for you. So, and, like,
we promise.
Let's figure this out.
Like, we're going to give you a max deal when you're coming out. But just, like, please figure it out. That'd be, like, step one. And then I think step two, I try to trade Okafor, and I just give up on Embiid. I know Sixers fans don't want to hear that, but, like, I don't see how he fits with Simmons. And ultimately, like, the best way to work around a bad jump shot, and this is sort of what George Karl was trying to do in Sacramento last year, is just, like, run. Because, you know, then you're in the open court, you're using his natural playmaking ability. He's able to, you know, make hard drives to the rim, get high percentage looks. And you're so young anyways, you might as well. So that's how I like the Sixers to play. And I don't see how Embiid fits with that.
Well, Embiid, I loved Embiid. I went to Lawrence, Kansas to write about Embiid and Wiggins when they were in college. Like, I thought he was going to be amazing. Then pre-draft, the bone condition stuff started leaking and it was like, this sucks.
Yeah.
So, but I think you still got to keep him around to see for this year, what he can do.
Well, because you can't trade him. Like, you're
and
stuck with
him. There's a decent chance that he could end up being a great 20 minutes off the bench type guy. And that's the workload that makes the most sense for him, which would fit with the Sixers plan more than trying to build a starting lineup with Simmons and Embiid.
Totally.
Because they do need to run. I agree. What else? Other rookies? Do you have any, like, passionate thon maker opinions?
So he fouled out, which was awesome. Because
which is hard to do. 10 fouls.
Vegas rules 10 fouls. It's like, anytime there's a foul out, and this is going to be a shout out to Danny LaRue, because he's one of the Vegas lifers here at Summer League. he got so excited. I don't know if I've seen a grown man that excited in a while, because he was like,
because of the foul
out? He was just like counting up, because he loves the foul outs, and then like he loves the Thon Maker story. And so you put them together and he was just like 7, 8, 9. It was like reverse New Year's Eve. He was so excited.
That's great.
He did have a 17-17 game against the D-League Select. I'll say this about Thon Maker. That guy goes pretty hard. And he's pretty fast end-to-end. I still don't think he's good, but...
I don't think he's good either, but I think that... I was like super negative on draft night about the pick. And that's more, I think people on the internet, like certain Bucks fans, like kind of took it as like an attack on Thon. Like I want him to succeed. Like he's had a crazy ass journey
for sure.
And some of the people around him have been kind of shady. Like he's sort of a basketball, like almost a cautionary tale, or at least was for about 6 months this year, and then it had the happy ending.
No, I think it's a great ending, right?
Yeah, the best possible ending. But it was more, my issue was more with their decision making, and that this has been like an issue for them for a couple years now. But Thon, I think there's a chance where he could be a center who protects the rim and rebounds and runs the floor, and then can possibly step out and hit like an 18-foot jump shot, where he makes a ton of sense for the Bucks. The question is whether he ever gets there.
Yeah, so I don't know if we talked about this or not, but this was one of the things that was kind of floating around after the draft, the idea that like there was sort of a shelf like right around that 10 spot in the draft where it just kind of came down to sort of longer shots, you know, just like take, you know, like there's not.
Yeah.
And so
like if he can be that guy, he's definitely worth the 10th pick.
And so, you know, just kind of talking to people in Vegas, they're like, well, from what he's shown here, like he kind of justified it, because how many guys behind him have like totally outplayed him, like, or like made it look bad, right?
Yeah.
And so if he's, and if, you know, we're giving him the age that he's claiming, like there's got to be some upside there, right? So,
and even if he's 23, which I think is probably more likely at this point, like that's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, and if he's 23, then you have him like from his prime years on his rookie contract. Yeah. So, like, that's great.
The age stuff is more important when you're talking about, like, franchise player, superstar level.
Totally agree.
Like, it doesn't really matter otherwise.
Yeah, because he's never going to be in line for, like, one of their top four contracts, right?
Right.
So, it's a great point. But that was some of the buzz. I think there was, like, it wasn't like he blew people away.
Yeah.
But people weren't just, like, trying to jump on Milwaukee, like, immediately in terms of, like, just the buzz at the gym for making that pick, because they felt like that's just kind of how the talent was. And like, also people were a little bit sidetracked making fun of Papa Giannis.
I haven't seen Papa Giannis yet.
Well, this is a great thing about Papa Giannis. I mean, if you have conspiracy theories, right?
Yeah.
So his first game, he shows up, he's been going through the mini camp, training camp with Sacramento Kings. First game, he shows up, email comes out, text comes out pretty much right before tip off. Oh, he's got knee stiffness. He's got to go out and undergo a precautionary MRI.
So
you're like, oh, did he just get scared? Like, what happened here? And so that goes down. And then he plays the second game. They dump the ball to him on the low block. He dribbles like 5 times to get himself directly underneath the hoop. He throws the ball up over his shoulder, all the way over the basket.
God.
And then he goes back on defense. And credit to DeMarcus Cousins for sitting courtside at this and like not reacting, like
losing his mind.
But they've been doing weird things. Like they start him, but he plays like 3 minutes and then they yank him.
Okay.
And
I heard at one point they played three centers.
Apparently in the first game, I did not see this, but apparently they tried to play Scal at point guard.
Nice.
But then the incredible like ingenious solution was to somehow draft David Stockton. Like I think they took David Stockton off a different roster and brought him in. So the Kings are just being the Kings for sure.
You know who the Kings remind me of? There was a time 20 years ago when the DC government had
a crackhead for a mayor.
Yes, it was when the DC government, when DC reelected Marion Barry post crack and hooker scandal, and the federal government had to step in and really take some of the power from local governance away from DC. That's where the Kings have been for about 2.5 years.
Wow.
I'm waiting for Adam Silver to step in and be like, all right, NBA Marion Barry,
you
don't have any power.
You just destroyed my Lent analogy. I'm so jealous.
It's pretty rough. We need to trade Boogie. Next topic though. Another rumor that has been going around Russell Westbrook on the Celtics.
Yep. So when I was, they asked me last week before Summer League, like, pick the most logical trade destinations. And to me, the two most logical for teams who would trade for him without sort of like 100% assurance that he was going to come back next summer were the Celtics and the Lakers. The Lakers, because they just have that insane Lakers confidence and braggadocio bravado.
Well, the Lakers, because they've been making, like, reckless, stupid decisions for, like, 6 or 7 years now.
And they just also think that, they, like, L.A. will appeal to these guys no matter what. Like, they always kind of lean back on it.
Side note, if I were Sam Presti, I would be calling every single day.
Yes.
I'd be like, listen, we'll take D'Angelo. We'll take Ingram. Like, whatever you want to give us.
Yeah, like, haven't you heard, like, Ingram's a narcoleptic? Like,
yeah.
Just like... Yeah, so
carpet bombing Mitch Kupchak, and actually I would go around Mitch to get straight to Jim Buss.
Oh yeah.
So
which was another amazing part about that Simmons versus Ingram game, by the way.
What?
Lakers fans are lit the whole game. They showed Jim Buss on the big screen. Vicious boos.
Oh,
and
man.
Then they cut away from him and he's like shaking his head or whatever. They go back to him and he gets a second round of vicious boos.
That's pretty mean.
That was great. And kind of deserved, though.
Oh, totally deserved. Yeah. I was saying mean on the production staff going back for more.
So I thought the Lakers, like, they kind of made sense. But I think the Celtics make so much sense. I'm completely in. I think they should try to do it. I mean, this is how they built the last team, right? You get the one piece, you get the second piece, you go forward. I think that you could probably get Westbrook without giving up Jalen Brown. You can probably...
I don't think you can give it. I mean, first of all,
what's the package? What's the package if you're the Thunder? What do you want?
I would want, and this is, I'm not sure whether they can trade the right to swap with Brooklyn next year. Do you know?
I don't know offhand how that works.
Yeah, I don't know how it works, but I would demand that and the other Nets pick.
Okay.
In I think it's 2018. Getting all the years are blending together at this point in the summer.
So you're basically saying two first round picks.
The next two firsts.
And then what?
And then I guess throw in Isaiah. I mean, I don't know.
Well, like, if you're
I think their plan is to try and keep everybody, but two first round picks and Jaylen Brown probably is what I would demand if I were them. And then they could roll with Oladipo, Campaign off the bench. I mean, it's bleak, but they could still probably push, like, for an 8 seed.
Yeah, I mean, you might – it's weird. If you trade Westbrook out, you might want to try to get one of those point guards back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
– Or do you really tear things down and look and auction off Steven Adams? I mean, Steven Adams is a phenomenal asset.
This is really weird to say. I think Presti can survive losing Durant. I think he can survive trading Westbrook. If he trades Steven Adams, they might actually run him out of town.
The relocation really starts when they trade Steven Adams.
So if you're the Celtics, two firsts and a Jaylen Brown for Russell Westbrook, I do it. I just do it.
Yeah.
I don't hesitate. I understand that people are going to nitpick, you got a risk assessment. He could leave. He doesn't want to be there. But you're a big market. You've got a winning foundation. It's a better situation basketball-wise for him than Oklahoma City.
I don't know if I would do it, though.
I'd do it.
I feel like the Celtics right now are settling for, like, kind of the leftover stars.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Horford, for instance, was a huge coup when it looked like he was going to be the guy who swung the Durant sweepstakes. But then when KD goes to Golden State, like, suddenly the Horford deal is not that great.
So,
I mean, like, he's declining at this point.
No, I feel you, but so let's...
And Russ, I don't think, like, if you look at his next deal, like, I don't know how many more years he has in this sort of, like, elite category before injuries and stuff start to screw with him.
So here's my counter. Like, I agree with what you said about Horford. So the time is now. Like, you got to do it. Like, you're going to try to maximize his next couple of years.
Is the time now, given how good Golden State is? If I were Danny, I would probably be like, all right, let's take a step back. Let's use these assets. Let's see what we can do here.
I don't know. I'd go the other way with it because, like, you work so hard to get a Horford. You got to make the most of his next couple of years. And
Patience has never been a Danny Ainge specialty, we should add.
I think he's done a really good job of being patient. Like, I guess. That's why I think the time is up right now.
You go back, like, he was trying to trade for Allen Iverson, like, back in, this was Nuggets era Iverson. So I think he's definitely going to be in the mix for Russ.
So I just think, like, if you align Russell, and you immediately get more out of Horford's prime, no question about it. You give yourself the type of talent where you should be locked in as the number two seed in the Eastern Conference next year. If you've got guys like Crowder still, if you're not sacrificing a lot of your complementary pieces, you've got good bigs in terms of, like, you know, the moves they made to bring guys back and whatever. Like, your squad is pretty stacked. You've got a great coach who's going to be able to, work with Westbrook in terms of
the Brad Stevens, Russell Westbrook dynamic would be pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, don't you want to write the story like Russell Westbrook actually has the gigantic basketball IQ story? Like, that could come out.
I don't know. It could also tear NBA Reddit apart.
Okay, fair.
We'll see what happens.
I say go for it 100%. And then also, if you have Westbrook and Horford as your core going forward into free agencies, going forward to the trade deadline, we talked about these stranded stars. Like, is it impossible to add a third guy? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's maybe why they would want to do it, is say, all right, we're gonna add two guys and see who else we can find.
I love it. I'm all in. And I think the Thunder should really do it. And if you can get two firsts and Jaylen Brown for 1 year, Russell Westbrook, I think that's a pretty easy, like,
That definitely. From their standpoint, yeah, they've got to be, like, over the moon at that.
Or even if it's, like, the Nets pick Jaylen Brown at some other piece, right? Like, yeah. I think you could even still pitch that if you're Presti. Because the Thunder fans are already primed for this kind of stuff. Like, they've already gone through the Harden thing and saw that it worked out well enough. They just traded Ibaka, so they kind of, the writing's on the wall there. Like, I think Presti would have the juice to do it. Like, I don't think it would backfire on him from a public relations standpoint.
No, obviously, I think no matter what, Kevin Durant is getting blamed for everything.
For sure. And don't you think the Thunder should trade Westbrook now? I think so. I'm, like, way in that camp.
Yeah, and I understand the Celtics are one of the only teams that actually – it would make sense to trade for him without, like, a ironclad promise, because if they go out and win 55 to 60 games, it's going to be much harder for Russ to leave and say, like, all right, I'm going to go down to Miami and bet my future on Hassan Whiteside.
And also, we're in this super team era. Everybody agrees. Even Adam Silver seemed to agree, right? Like, the two teams, like, yeah, we're headed for the first three match, which I'm going to continue to trademark. we're headed for the first three match in NBA history.
It's a Gulliver special. Yeah.
But there's no shame in being the second best team in your conference, because if LeBron goes down with whatever.
I would love it if the Celtics got, like, a little bit more firepower.
That's what I'm saying.
It would make the league more entertaining. I don't know if I were a Celtics fan, if I would be that into it.
Oh, I would. I mean, who's been there, like, since they tore it down? They haven't had that guy to rally around. And the one thing that we know about Thunder fans is that Westbrook was kind of a god. Like, yes, he was polarizing in certain – but if he's on your team and he gives it every single night and he's putting up crazy triple-doubles and he's always competing, like, if I'm a Celtics fan, like, that is better than, like, messing around with lots of quarters and dimes and, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would just – if I was a Celtics fan, I'd be, like, rushing to buy that Westbrook jersey. I'd be rushing to get season tickets. I want to see this guy in person. Like, this is the new era. It's not quite as good as KD to the Warriors. I grant you that completely. But that's still a big deal.
Yeah. All right, well, we have two more topics. Give me your Tim Duncan eulogy here.
So you came at me really hard out of nowhere yesterday. Like, trying to, like, really come at my credibility.
A little bit. To recap for anyone, I clicked on an article that Ben had written. I guess, was this during the year?
Yeah, so it was, like, remember when Jack McCallum kind of put he redid his best 50 players of all time list, because it was the 20th anniversary of when
they did
the top 50 players. It was, like, the 96 All-Star game or whatever. So he redid it, and he just did his, like, he kicked out 20 and brought in a new 20, or basically just made it so it was still 50.
Okay.
So my thought was, okay, let's just put all those first 50 aside. Who are, like, the top 20 of the last 20 years who weren't on that original list? And let's just do it in priority order, right?
And I clicked on this and saw that you had Tim Duncan number one and didn't know any of the context. And I was just like, what has Gulliver been drinking? Like, are you kidding me?
So some of it's a timing issue, right? I think the biggest debate is Duncan versus Kobe. You're always going to find me in the Duncan camp, because he's just a better all-around player. They didn't have the dips. Same number of rings. Duncan can claim more central roles in their titles. The consistency stuff to me is just, I can't get enough of that. Like, if you're very, very good for 19 years in a row, to me, it's just like mind blowing. And then I think the other interesting debate is, okay, Duncan versus LeBron. And this was at the point where LeBron's 2-4 in the finals, hadn't had that, you know, kind of championship ceiling or reputation ceiling championship. So to me, like, if I'm going to rethink it, I would be more inclined to put LeBron over Duncan potentially. I mean, certainly think LeBron's going to finish above Duncan by the time he retires.
Uh-huh.
But like for this very specific exercise, the last 20 years when Duncan's entire career is like 19 of those 20 years and the Spurs are easily the most consistent and dominant team, and he's the reason why, I think you got to give it to him.
So wait, you still put Duncan over LeBron? Come on, man.
I think so. If we're talking about careers, if we're talking about total careers, it's really close. I mean, those guys are 1-2. There's no question about it. LeBron's peaks are unquestionably higher.
Unpopular opinion.
Yeah.
Tim Duncan is overrated.
Oh, come on.
Duncan is overrated. I'm sorry. Internet, I'm sorry.
Oh my God, this is hurting my...
We've gotten to the point where everyone
talks... Dude, I'm vaping. I'm vaping right now. I'm so stressed out by this.
No, come on, man. He's good. Tim Duncan was phenomenal. Top 15 all time. Like, his resume is unimpeachable. But first of all, with the Duncan-Kobe stuff, everyone forgets Shaq was better than both those guys. Yes. You want to talk about underrated? Shaq is underrated. We don't talk about how amazing he was.
And that's one part of the thing with this conversation. Shaq was already on the top 50 list when they did it in 96. So it was like his third year or fourth year, and they're already just like, bro, we know you're amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you're in.
I feel like every time we have these like greatest ever conversations, people bring up Duncan and be like, well, we always forget to talk about Duncan. Nobody forgets to talk about Tim Duncan. We forget to talk about Shaq.
Okay, I'm granting you that.
The Kobe situation, that's a much closer debate.
Okay.
I think I'm going to write about this for next week. It's a much closer debate than people acknowledge.
Like, I think it's close. I will always take Duncan.
That's fair. It's a totally fair, because like if you take Duncan, you say, all right, not only was he great, but he so much of what people celebrate about the Spurs culture started with Duncan.
Yep.
And you look at, and it almost comes down to giving Duncan partial credit for the careers that Manu and Tony Parker had, which I think is fair, because if you put Manu and Tony Parker next to Kobe, like, there's no way they turn into quasi Hall of Fame guys.
Duncan also had a lot of clutch moments in the playoffs. Like, people kind of forget about that, but like,
yeah,
he had some real signature, like, it wasn't pretty, you know.
One of the things I like about Duncan and Kobe, the conversation, is that like their legends have become so outsized
100%.
That people forget that watching either Kobe or Duncan work was pretty boring. Like, Kobe had some ugly, ugly performances.
See, that's what I'm saying.
But then so did Duncan. I mean, if Duncan had been the most popular player or the best player in the NBA for the last 15 to 16 years,
yeah,
like, the NBA would be kind of screwed. Like, there's parts of being a superstar that he willfully ignored,
100%.
Which is fine.
Actually, worse than that, like, went out of his way to not take those burdens.
Yeah, like, he didn't want the burden that comes with being, or not the burden, just there's a responsibility to promote the game that he just never
engaged with, which is
fine. But I also think we talk about the dips with Kobe. The peaks with Kobe were better than any Spurs team, except for maybe 2014,
yeah,
a title that Duncan gets credit for that is, I mean, it's a little dicier to me.
No, he was really, really good.
The one thing I like is in your Duncan retrospective, you pointed out, the thing you wrote this week,
yeah,
you pointed out the first half of it was about that overtime,
yep,
in OKC.
In
right?
OKC game 6.
He was amazing,
oh, yeah,
down the stretch in that.
Dude, they just went to him. And like, okay, so
that was his last truly legendary performance.
100%. But he was also awesome in the 2013 playoffs, including in the finals against LeBron. Like, he was good.
He was good, yeah.
He was really good. He was really good throughout the 2014 playoffs. And they smoked everybody to the point where like, he didn't even have to be on the court. It was almost like pre-Warriors a little bit, because they were so, especially at home, they were so good that the only drama in that entire postseason was the game that I talked about,
game
6. Well,
hold on, though. I think the Spurs over the years, I think for the first 15 years, were built in his image.
Yeah.
And now they've sort of evolved to become kind of this international ball movement machine.
For sure. But he's first of all, he's a really good passer.
Yeah.
An unbelievable passer. And he has the personality where he doesn't need to be the alpha. So that facilitates all of that. He was able to keep up when the tempo would change. And then on top of that, the Spurs really are not an offensive team. For the last 19 years, they have been a defensive team. And he has been
totally
arguably the best defensive player. Like, and I saw some people, right? Like the best defensive player ever. I don't know if I'd go that far, but he's definitely in the conversation. I don't know. I don't know if you saw this chart I tweeted out. During the Tim Duncan era, the Spurs defensive rating was like 100. Nobody else in the league was better than 103. So like the gap between the Spurs and everybody else over that entire time period in terms of consistency of defense was almost as big as the gap between the second team and the 30th team.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are just like on a freaking island by themselves. And it's all because Duncan's just back there, never fouling people, protecting the paint, taking away whatever your best low post option is, cleaning the defensive glass, and then just working with any kinds of players you want to put around them. So I don't know. I just
feel like Kobe gets a little short shrift. Like he was incredible too as a two-way player,
okay.
All NBA defense, like historically good offense. I mean, he's the closest thing we've seen to Jordan. And like,
okay, so here's my counter to that. If we're talking about the top 20 players of the last 20 years, if we can agree that Duncan or LeBron, I'm probably going to say Duncan won right now. I'm sure you'll say LeBron won right now.
Yes, unless we're talking 20 years. Are we so old that Shaq's prime is...
Yeah, those guys, he was already in. So
okay.
Like, so Shaq's already taken care of. So we're just saying like the top 20 players that weren't on the original 50 greatest of all time.
Yeah.
So it's like 96
LeBron,
to present.
And my thing with Kobe, it involves more like... cultural relevance
and
what like why you watch basketball. I think Kobe was a more interesting,
totally.
Indelible character.
I grant that 100%
than Duncan.
No, it's not even close.
Yeah,
great, completely so, granted. And I think LeBron actually has a better argument than Kobe on that. So
definitely.
If you want to take that path, I think that's the best argument for LeBron being number one right now. But I think we can both agree Kobe's not going to be lower than third on the last 20 years, right?
Correct.
I had Kobe third. So are you really shortchanging him if he's third to Duncan and LeBron?
No, I think he's getting shortchanged by like every basketball person that this past week has been like, it's not even an argument with Kobe.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that so much.
I've seen a lot of people like dismissing it. Like it's a really close, fascinating debate in terms of what you value and whether it matters. Like at the peak, his Lakers teams were better than any of the Spurs teams. And then but at the same time, like Duncan maintained that baseline of success that like I don't even think if we've seen anybody do it for as long as the Spurs have.
In a single market, never.
The early Celtics, like you can't really even count them because there wasn't the kind of depth of talent around the league. So
here's one other thing in defense of Kobe. And this is a great plug for you, by the way. I can't wait to read this defense of Kobe because, Kobe definitely needs people coming to his rushing to
Yeah,
his.
No. That's the thing. And Kobe has so many like zealots who give his defenders like a horrible name.
I think the setting,
I'm not,
the
I'm
record.
Not like a ring. Guy.
Yeah, no, set the record straight on Kobe's legacy. I think that's an awesome column. I can't wait to read that. But just to your point about like embracing the mantle of sort of being the face of the NBA, being a big star. I mean, Kobe had 20 press conferences I went to this year that were better than any press conference or availability that I saw during Duncan's career.
Yeah.
Just this year alone.
Well, and Kobe was a psycho who had like built this completely manufactured image for himself, which, you know, was enjoyable. I think the one thing that's cool is that as guys retire, we enjoy, like, one of the best parts about being a basketball fan is that eventually you kind of enjoy each guy for their own idiosyncrasies. Like, I kind of like that LeBron is just corny.
Yeah.
Like, has always been corny. Like, he tries to do cool stuff and it doesn't quite work, but, like, there's a charm to it now. And then, Kobe was completely manufactured and, it is what it is, and I enjoy him, and I enjoy Duncan for being like a total sort of introvert.
I mean, 19 straight years of winning percentage 61 or better, 18 straight years of PER 21 or better.
So, yeah,
dude,
no,
it's
wild.
It's impossible. Well, the crazy part about that though is like the only person who's going to really ever come close to challenging some of that stuff actually is LeBron. Like, if he wants to play that long, like he has the ability, like he could go. And I kind of hope he does. I would love to see old man LeBron. I've actually argued with Lee about this.
Yeah.
and I don't want to like put words in his mouth, but I think he generally tends towards the idea that LeBron's not going to like completely milk it, you know, because there's so much else
going
on.
I was wondering about that the other day, whether we're going to get LeBron till he's 45 years old or LeBron at like leaves at 36.
I would love 45-year-old LeBron.
I guess.
I don't know. Can't you see him being like Ken Griffey Sr. feeding LeBron Jr. on the wing?
Oh, man.
On like the 2030 Cavs? I could see it. I really could see that. I mean, like, I don't think it's going to happen, but this is like my dream scenario.
Yeah. Just a kid from Akron playing forever. yeah, okay. So let's wrap up here with... Do you have any thoughts on Hackishack?
So Silver's press.
You were at the Board of Governors meeting.
I was in a holding room, eating like unbelievable chocolate chip cookies, until they had the press conference. So I wasn't really at the meeting, but I was at the press conference. Silver, he got trolled legendarily by Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post.
How so?
Well. You know, they released the press release on the Hackishack rules beforehand, right? So we all have like 20 or 30 minutes to digest it before he's going to talk about it. So I think they do that to kind of take the temperature, see how people react to it, you know? So they send this out and everyone pretty much hops on immediately. Like, this is a pretty soft compromise, right? So Bontemps goes in there and he asks a question, you know, like, is this cosmetic at best? And for whatever reason, like the word cosmetic just like got stuck in Silver's head. And he kept going back to being like, this isn't a full step, but it's a half step, and it's not cosmetic at all. like you could just like tell like he just did not want to hear that.
I don't understand why they wouldn't just change it. I mean,
and he didn't have really a good answer for that. I mean, his basic answer was like, "Look, it's a step in the right direction."
Can you summarize for any listeners?
Yeah. Okay.
And possibly for me who didn't really care about reading the press release that much.
So for the Hackishack rules right now, basically in the final 2 minutes of the game from during last season, you couldn't hack because the guy who got fouled would get one shot plus the ball. So like hacking is basically a terrible strategy. It doesn't pencil out, right? You're just giving the team a free throw. They've now extended that. So it's the final 2 minutes of all four quarters.
Okay.
So the idea is like part of that is, you know, teams were hacking just to get 2-for-1s like late in the second quarter, late in the first quarter, whatever. So they're just going to theoretically eliminate all of those 2-for-1 hacks, which
got
is
it.
Good. But you're still going to be able to hack basically with impunity in the first 10 minutes of all four quarters. So, you know, if DeAndre Jordan's out there and there's 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter,
isn't the idea also that it's easier to hack later in quarters because teams have already
accumulated fouls? Yeah, for sure.
So they're in the bonus.
Yep.
And, for me, like, just change it so that teams have the option of taking a side out possession until the final 2 minutes of the game when people legitimately hack to get the ball back. But like, otherwise it's just a really simple fix.
So a couple things. So the other things that they took out was you can't jump on guys back like Chris Paul did to Dwight Howard, you know, during the free throws, like the really goofy hacks.
Yeah. So
those are,
is that a flagrant now? Or
that's a flagrant.
Objection
flagrant. So you just can't do those. Those are going to be gone, which is great. They had to get rid of those. Those were ridiculous. And then the other one was you can't foul before the release on an inbounds pass. So you can't just mug guys to like try to get the dead ball foul.
All right.
So they claimed, Silver claimed, the money quote was 45% of hacks should be eliminated. They're hoping to get almost half of the hacks out of the game if they with these rule changes. And that's why he was sort of defending it as not the full step that you're calling for, but a legitimate half step because they think the data is going to pan out. Now, he did admit, like, the coaches are going to adjust, right?
Yeah.
So you might just wind up like whack-a-mole style where you take out certain kinds of hacks, but then your other ones start up earlier. We'll have to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
It's better. I definitely think it's better.
I agree with Silver. Like, it makes sense to do this cautiously and sort of see what happens. And then if they need more changes, then they can make more changes. But it's also frustrating because we could have done this half measure 2 years ago. I mean, this has been like an obvious issue for like 5 years now.
Well, so my theory on that, though, is I just think that they can't get a majority of the owners because I think the owners.
Maybe
look,
that's it.
I think the owners look at it like, do I have to face Andre Drummond in the playoffs?
Yeah.
If so, I want him on the bench. Do I have to face DeAndre Jordan in the playoffs? If so, I want him on the bench. And I think it just comes down as simple as that. And I do think there's some old school traditionalists who are in that, like, you have to make your free throws camp. But I also think that's the cover story for, like, this is an amazing competitive advantage that we have against teams that are like, playoff teams. Like, if Drummond played on the worst team in the league and DeAndre Jordan played on some irrelevant team, I think that would be easier to like make this case. But when it's only a few guys who are really getting hacked a lot, and those guys are playing big roles on playoff teams.
Yeah.
Like, why would you ever vote against your own? Like, if let's say you were the representative.
The politics among the owners is always fascinating.
But like, if you were Vivek, right? Or that's a bad example because then you'd be a psycho. But like,
who knows what Vivek
okay.
wants?
Better example.
I want Vivek to trade Boogie, man.
Okay, so you would trade to Marcus Cousins.
I would trade Boogie to Washington, D.C. for Otto Porter and Kelly Oubre so that we could keep Beal and take on the Cavs.
But let's say you're the Jazz, right? You're this up-and-coming franchise. You're at the Board of Governors meeting. Your thought is, best case scenario, you make the Western Conference Finals next year, but that's going to require you beating the Clippers in the first round or the second round.
Yeah.
Why would you ever vote to change the Hack-a-Shaq rules so that DeAndre could be on the court against you?
No, that's 100%. That's probably – maybe that's part of it. I'm not sure. I also think that Silver, by nature, is just more yeah. cautious and sort of – cerebral about this stuff, whereas like David Stern would just sort of
play the smack.
Would actually David Stern would be in denial for about 4 or 5 years and then come to just turn everything upside down.
So part of my read on why he was so touchy about the cosmetic situation was because I think he actually wanted more. Like
okay.
the way he was laying
That's
it out
fair.
During the finals press conference, you were at the finals press conference with him, I think.
Yeah.
And then the way he was laying it out maybe at All-Star Weekend was that he was ready to take bigger steps, right? And I think maybe he was just disappointed that people didn't view this as a big step. Maybe he did view it, but I think he wanted to go further. And ultimately, he's at the mercy of these owners voting. Like, he can only get by so much. And I think he's very pragmatic, and I think he was willing to call this a win.
What do you think of his comments on the Warriors? Is he grandstanding with the lockout? Grandstanding for the owners, basically?
Two things, yeah. I think, one, he's, like, trying to rep for all the owners who are feeling a little bit pissed off about this.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of owners who rightfully would be pissed off about this. I mean, imagine if you had to give Chandler Parsons max money and KD goes to the Warriors.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be angry.
It's going to be a really delicate balance for the next 12 months or so.
And also, the other thing that, you know, when the TV deal came out, everyone was like, oh, this is the NBA's golden goose, right? There's not going to be a lockout anymore. This is going to save things. There's so much money. They're not going to want to stop it. My initial reaction, which I wrote, and not a lot of people seem to agree or really kind of like hop on it, but I don't think that more money makes greedy people less greedy. Like, I think
yeah.
it just makes them think that you can run the score up even more, right?
That's a great point.
So if you're the owners, like, this is your situation where last time around during the lockout, you wanted a hard cap. A hard cap would definitely break up super teams. Like, it would be very, very difficult,
yeah,
even for these, like, if for the Warriors to even keep together their top four guys, if there was a hard cap coming in, somebody would have to go. Probably.
But if you're a fan, I don't think we want a hard cap ever.
Okay, so I'm not making the case that I want a hard cap.
Okay, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, I think this is how they're sort of laying it out, right? Like, if you're the owners and you're worried about super teams, you didn't get it last time, and you're also just greedy by nature.
This is how every bargaining process starts.
Yeah. If you're just
the players come in saying, like, we want an uncapped league.
Yeah.
The owners want. I think uncapped league is really the more realistic scenario to abolish super teams, because then suddenly no one's going to pay Steph, KD.
You can't have a $3 billion payroll.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we know that's not going to happen, though.
Yeah, no, I know. But yeah. I think that's how the players and owners both start. Do you agree with him that it's not ideal for the league?
No, I mean, I think it's great for the league. Like, I think that part is just disingenuous. I mean, the TV ratings are great. The jersey sales are great. I'm really excited to see the Warriors next year.
I'm kind of excited.
Oh,
I'm still
yeah.
a little pissed off. I still feel like it was a little bit lame. A friend of mine, actually, I was talking to a friend about this, and he pointed out that, like, KD, we've always loved KD, and now, it, like, even on the Warriors, he, like, I'm not going to root against KD. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to hate Durant, whatever. He's not a good enemy, but then they're also not fun to root for, so
yeah.
it's just kind of like a blah situation.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest objection to the Warriors.
Okay, here's my litmus test for you. When you saw his jerseys and when you saw his Nikes in the Golden State colorways.
I haven't seen them yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, should I break this out on
no.
my phone right now?
No, we gotta go.
All right.
But
I'm just saying, like, when you see them, I think you're going to be excited. Like, I think there's, like, you're not going to be like,
No, I think it'll be cool. Yeah. But I do think that there's an aspect of this that will always be lame. I read an article about the Warriors virtual reality presentation featuring that Drake and Future song, like, you want to switch teams? Like, it was just like super, super lame. And I was like, wow, this is what it's come to in 2016.
So I was like joking to people that, like, you know how Tom Brady showed up for the Celtics? Like, I thought they were going to bring like hologram JFK as like part of their pitch.
Yeah.
And the Warriors basically topped that.
Yeah.
Real quick on the hard cap though, like, I think that's what Silver's trying to do with the anti-super team stuff. I don't, like, he wasn't really taking shots at the Warriors so much. I think he was really just pushing that same competitive balance issue, which was like central to all of their arguments last time around.
Yeah.
And
as they were angling for more money.
And like
the ultimate cliche.
Yeah. Cause they're always trying to say they're equating always like guaranteed profitability with guaranteed competitiveness. Like, those are like their two things, and they try to put them together every single time. Yeah. And it's not really how it works, but that's their argument.
And my feeling is that the NBA is generally healthier when there are four or five great teams,
yeah,
and everyone else in the middle, and then four or five teams who are rebuilding.
Yeah.
And the system is working to that effect. This was just an anomaly this summer, yeah, and next summer. So I wouldn't necessarily change a whole lot and just accept the fact that maybe the ideal solution would have been cap smoothing. It didn't get done for a variety of reasons. And, but I wouldn't overhaul a whole lot.
Yeah. Last thing on this, Silver has tried to make the point that like a lot of these conference finalist teams have like kind of turned over in these last few years. So that should be evidence of competitive balance. Like, you had the Raptors in there before, it was the Pacers, you had the Hawks, you had the Rockets,
yeah,
Spurs were in there, Thunder were in there this year. Like, does that satisfy you at all? Like, do you buy that, or do you kind of just chalk that up to like reach? Kind of seems like a reach.
It definitely seems like a reach, but wait, so are we talking about market size?
Well, he's just saying like, yeah, you could look at the market size, but just also the sheer quantity of teams that are kind of cycling through. Like,
well, I think I'm speaking mostly as someone who grew up loving the NFL and now doesn't really give a shit about that sport anymore, because parity has like ravaged that sport to where everyone is equally mediocre except for like two teams. I don't think that's what the NBA needs.
Yeah.
So that would be like, I think that's sort of the cautionary tale. And
if there was one thing I wish I could have wrote about the Warriors when they came together that I kind of blanked on, is I just assumed they were going to be together for 5 or 6 years. They might not be.
Yeah, it could be quick.
And then how crazy would this whole like summer of overreaction be of like, oh, these guys are ruining it, like KD, you know, the flack that he took. And just what if he's just not there in 2 years? Or what if, yeah, Steph has to go? I mean, I don't think Steph would go anywhere, but like, what if they have to like trade Klay Thompson, like a James Harden situation? Or what if Andre Iguodala?
I don't think they're going to have, I think Lacob is ready to spend, because they're also going to, they're about to open up a new arena in a year or two. So we'll see. But listen, this is not about, we're in Vegas right now.
Yeah.
The Wizards are about to have a playoff game in Vegas Summer League, and we're running late. Wizards Hawks, I'm going to get some DeAndre Bembry, Kelly Oubre in my life. We're going to have plenty of time to talk about the Warriors.
The real super team, the, yeah, Wizards Summer League squad.
Yeah, and the Hawks. Don't forget the Hawks. Like, who else did they get? The kid from Baylor. What's his name?
Yeah,
oh, no. Torian Prince.
Torian Prince.
Yo, it's going to be a great day. It's going to be a great day. Well, thank you guys. And thank you, Ben, for visiting me here. And now let's go get in your rental car.
Let's do it.
All right. Peace.
Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Open Floor. You can follow Andrew Sharp at Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver at Ben Golliver. And you can find the whole SI podcast network at si.com/podcast. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. And please leave a review if you like what you hear.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.